Warning.
This is the most important
podcast
of our lifetime.
Hello, everyone.
What is Hoppatarian?
So what is Hoppa? So when you put together Hoppatarians, what is that?
You know the thing.
They're here to awkward it up for you guys.
Which is a very interesting and beautiful mix of humanity.
Anyone has a podcast?
You're an extremist.
Shut up.
All right, let's get to it. Hey, what's happening? And welcome to the Hoppatarian Show, the only podcast hosted by someone who looks better with longer hair than short hair. Please don't forget to subscribe, leave a 5-star rating, and in the comments, tell us how much you love the Hoppa Ethno State. Our guest today has run for Congress, been to outer space, and is the author of an extremely offensive new children's book. It's Mark Huffman. How are you doing, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I am okay. I'm hanging in there, as we all are. Yeah. So let's just get right to it. Let's talk about that children's book that I just talked about there in the intro. And it's called Ma'am I Am, which, you know, like Sam I Am. So very, very, very good title there. So can you talk about what kind of sparked that whole interest in wanting to do that kind of thing? And if you, some of the backlash I'm guessing you've probably gotten for this, or anything else you'd like to talk about?
I'll tell you what, it hasn't been much. So, Oh golly, it's surprisingly not a ton of backlash, because it's, you know, extraordinarily hilarious. The only comments that I've gotten from people who are trans, you know, who identify as trans are, I'm trans and this is hilarious. Which was kind of the whole point of it. So, let's back up. I stumbled into writing children's books, and I would rather just write hilarious. You guys have them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're funny, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're good. Funny. And they're not political.
No.
That's what I'd rather do. But here's the story. All right. Here's the story. I'm sitting in my car in a parking lot, and I got my phone, and I have so many things on my phone. One time I decided to write a musical, so I took 13 days to write a 22-song musical based on the cosmic horror of H.P. Lovecraft. I spent a couple of weeks writing an entire album's worth of Bro Country parody lyrics, and then sent them to a session musician in Nashville who was dating my aunt, and he said, are these parody or serious? And I'm like, Pat, I sent you a song called You Put the Count in Country. I sent you a song called Blank Checking You Out, which is nothing but financial metaphors. What do you mean? Is it parody? So you can't parody Bro Country music. It's too goofy. But the point is, I write on my phone a lot, including all my normal children's books. And I was sitting in the car, and for years now, the transgender stuff is going to dominate the news. And I won't get into my background on it, but, you know, briefly, I'm a physician. It bothers me from a lot of different perspectives. It's misogynistic. It doesn't reflect biological reality. The suicide rate is through the roof. You're mutilating teenagers and then saying that you're treating something. They're physically healthy. It's to me, it's tantamount to taking an anorexic who says she really, really, really does feel fat and saying, well, you really feel fat. Here is some Phentermine and some Ozempic, and we're going to do a gastric sleeve on you because that's going to make you feel better. And then it does, except it's terrible for her. It's not treating her problem. All that to say, the whole thing bothers me, but also I like to, you know, find the humor in things, I guess. So it struck me that I should write a goofy little poem. And I'll call it Ma'am I Am. And it's just a conversation back and forth in delightful verse, kind of talking about, ooh, I mean, honestly, we could read it later. That's probably the funniest thing to get the idea across. But a couple of people, one of them says, I'm trans. And the other one's like, what? LOL? I don't understand. And you want to read it in a sec?
Yeah.
That'll probably be the funniest thing because it's pretty legit hilarious. And then everyone's like, this is hilarious. And then I just kind of left it because that's what I do on my phone. And then I had this gag with ChatGPT where, spoiler alert, if you follow me on Twitter and you think that anything that I do that's ChatGPT AI is actually ChatGPT AI, it's not, it's just me. I'm goofing on it. I thought it's a hilarious meme format, but you've seen the ChatGPT AI kind of format, kind of screenshots that get posted on Twitter. I'm like, that is a fantastic meme format. And I'm going to ask it something ridiculous. And then I'll type the answer and I'll say, I asked ChatGPT AI to, you know, write me a poem about how they feel about redheads. And it's this horrible thing about how they should all die. Or I wrote, you know, a poem about the modern Navy, and it's just goofy stuff. I asked ChatGPT AI to write a rap about dating a morbidly obese girl in America, you know, and then I do it. But one of the ones I did was I cribbed off some of my old stuff, and I did a little excerpt of my Mam I Am thing. And the excerpt went like this. Yeah, and it was, I asked ChatGPT AI to write a poem about the transgendered issue or something like that. Mm-hmm. I wrote, you have no uterus, so no, you cannot bleed from down below. I do not like your padded bra. You should not use the women's spa. You tell me you had surgery. Your pronouns still are him and he. Your chromosomes are X and Y. That means you'll always be a guy. You gave yourself a girly name. I do not care. You're not a dame. A surgeon chopped your eggs and ham. I still won't call you Mam I Am. And it was just a goof. But then a couple of people who were pretty big in that whole sphere, like, picked it up and retweeted it. And then it kept getting retweeted. And I'm like, what is happening right now? Have you ever had a tweet go viral?
Yeah, I've had a few. And it's funny how those type of tweets go. It's one of those ones where it's like throwaway.
Throwaway. It's like, this is just a gag in like another of the 10 gags of this exact kind that I did. And then you're like, that's the one? Really? Okay. But so like right now, we got well over 1 million views and I don't know how many likes, but it was this whole thing. And then a guy named Graham Linehan, he's like this legendary Irish comedy writer who over the last few years has been really kind of in this space fighting for women in the UK. And he said, can I put it on my Substack? And I said, well, just put the whole thing on your Substack. And then a comic book artist of mine, a buddy of mine, said, let's do a book. So we did the book, shopped it around at some publishers. The Babylon Bee passed on it, which was, that was my number one choice. And that's okay. A couple of other publishers who we're actually doing some projects with now, but we decided, what the heck, let's just crowdfund it and see what happens. And that just ended about 30 minutes ago, and we were just aiming for $5,000 for a just small first print run, and we got it. We got a little over six, so the book's gonna exist. But yeah, that's what happened. Kind of just snowballed like that. But I do feel pretty strongly about the damage that the whole movement has done to people, like real quantifiable damage. But it's also not that fun to just look. Have you ever heard of John Money?
Sounds familiar. Yeah,
he's not a good guy. Harry Benjamin, Alfred Kinsey. Michelle Foucault. Judith Butler, like these are people I can talk in pretty deep depth about the history of the transgendered movement, and it's really, really dark. Mm-hmm. It's extraordinarily misogynistic. I think it's going to be a very, very, history is not going to look very kindly on society allowing it to get to this point. And then it goes into some really dark places that these guys did. And that's not fun for me. What's fun for me is to write goofy poems about it. So that's what I did. That's my strategy. And just kind of doing my part and also having a goof and amusing myself. Most of my projects, Shane, are just to amuse myself. And then if anything else happens, that's great. That's super.
Yeah, you're taking a serious issue like transsexuals, and you're trying to put a comedic spin to it, but also in a way telling people that there is something that's catastrophically wrong here in this whole thing. Because like you were explaining how the suicide rate for these people is through the roof, and how this isn't something that just happened like 10, 15 years ago. It was something that's been boiling up for a long time.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, like Kinsey, for example, was someone who was just, totally whatever. And they made a movie about him. And I'm sure they made him look like a freaking genius or whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, sure. And he was on the cover of Time at the time.
Right.
Like he was famous. He was, but the seeds that he sowed were really, really terrible, and they're hurting a whole lot of people. And again, I'm a physician. I'm not going to talk about forearm phalloplasties and you know what they do with colons to make neo vaginas. Like that's just a colon.
Yeah, I've seen some images. It's pretty gruesome.
It's rough. I tell you, it's gruesome. For someone who is in the operating room watching surgery all day, it's gruesome.
Yeah.
There are not many things that can make me kind of, you know, have cringe.
Right.
Like, it give me a visceral sort of reaction. You just get used to all of it, but that stuff does. It's bad. And especially because you're not helping them. You're not actually fixing the problem, which is a fixed delusion. And obviously there are other things going on potentially. But none of it's great, and all of it's leading to a bad endpoint. But then again, everyone yells at it. You know, there's a place for people yelling about it. But I don't think that engenders any sort of thoughtful response, which is what it's going to end up taking. Is, you know, people, and I don't mean the hardcore activists. I mean kind of the middle of the road. I want to be kind to these people.
Right.
That's totally fine. I mean, I think that's appropriate. I want to be kind. I want to be respectful. I want to be caring. How does that look? In my contingent, it does not look like, well, then I'll just do whatever you say. I'll use whatever pronouns you use. I'll call you whatever name you want. I'll identify you as whatever you want to identify as, whether that's a boy or a girl or a cat or a fluid something other made up word that you just heard on Tumblr. I don't know. Maybe it's, well, no, I'm not going to enable you. You're a healthy young woman, or you're a healthy young man, and there's nothing wrong with your body, and you shouldn't mutilate yourself. Especially when it's the medical industry part of it is also disturbing from a professional standpoint.
Do you think someone like I guess Bruce Jenner now becoming Caitlyn Jenner, really, especially for people in the conservative Republican circles, they seem to be not 100%, but there's definitely a lot of them in that camp that seem to be more accepting to that because, oh, this Caitlyn Jenner person is a Republican. They liked so-and-so that's a Republican. So, hey, they're one of us. Yes.
Right.
Do you think that had something to do with it?
Yes. Bruce Jenner has done a lot of damage to society because of this. And I actually like him. And I appreciate that he's kind of sticking by his Republican principles. But Republican. I don't even know if I'm a Republican anymore. I don't have a lot of respect for the GOP these days. And part of the reason for that is all they're doing is adopting all of the social issues that 5 years ago were fringe leftist.
Mm-hmm.
They're just 5 years late. I'll give you a couple of examples. Again, look, I will straight up admit I'm a crazy, hardcore right-wing Calvin Coolidge, fiscal conservative, and I'm not talking like all right. I mean, basically I believe everything that I would have believed in 1985 when I was four, but you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean?
yeah.
Like I actually do believe in traditional marriage. I think Ronald Reagan was generally a good president, but he was one of the greatest villains in America when he was governor because he he introduced no-fault divorce into society, which has decimated the family. I mean, I am a prude. I am a very conservative, biblical Christian. Everything that goes along. I'm also a pretty nice guy, and I'm friends with everybody. But that being said, like, when you're talking about morality, I will say, well, what does Scripture say about these things? Like, what does the Bible say about these things? That's my view. And I'm not, look, and that being said, who isn't guilty of asexual sin? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's nobody. It's nobody. I don't care who you are. I'm not like, and what you're doing is wrong, and therefore I hate your guts. What you're doing is wrong, and therefore you're just like everybody else. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like
everyone's the sinner, basically. Like,
that's the whole point of the whole thing, is that everyone is a sinner. And you like your specific pet sin, and I'm going to say, well, no, that's still wrong. And then I'm going to treat you no different than anybody else. You know what I mean? And it is, I mean, it's a cliche, but love the sinner, hate the sin. No, that's pretty biblical. And I actually do try to do that. And I think I do an okay job of it. Because I don't have any trolls for some reason, which is crazy. I don't know where I was going with all that. But the point is, so conservatives. Obergefell, which legalized gay marriage, this is down a bunch of rabbit holes. I don't even know if we want to go, but was 2015. And then in like 2021, Jeremy Boring, the CEO of the Daily Wire, and this is just representative. I'm just, these are examples of what I'm talking about. Jeremy Boring, who's the CEO of Daily Wire, a conservative, hardcore conservative publication, he's congratulating on Twitter Spencer Clavin, who is a Daily Wire guy, and Joshua Herr, who's the lead counsel for the Daily Wire, on their male-male engagement. So that was 6 years, and we went from, absolutely, this is a fringe left, I can't believe the Supreme Court legalized this, to, congratulations, fellas.
Right.
Wow, that was really fast. And then we moved to the transgender issue. That's extraordinarily fringe leftist. That's crazy. It's biological nonsense. Bruce Jenner is on Hannity again. I mean, Caitlin, sorry. So that was like 4 years. And so I guess this is what, ignore the substance of those. John Money was a New Zealand psychologist, and you should look him up because he's an absolute medical monster. He's most famous for taking twin boys. One of them had a botched circumcision.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
You remember that?
Yeah, now I know. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can look up YouTube videos, it'll explain the whole thing. And John Money, whose whole thesis was sex and gender are totally, totally a product of your environment. And they told the parents, well, raise him as a girl. He's going to be a girl. She's going to be a girl. And it was perfect for him because it was twins, right? And so the whole, this poor guy's whole childhood, where his parents were saying, you're a girl, you're a girl, you're a girl, he's just super messed up. It didn't help that John Money was sexually abusing his brother and him every time they went and saw him for a follow-up or a checkup. Jeez. But eventually it was like, what is the deal? And his parents copped to it. They're like, okay, listen, you're a boy, and your circ got jacked up. And he lived life as a man from then on, got married, and then eventually he and his brother both killed themselves. So John Money's a monster. But one of the things he wrote a lot about is the difference between affectionate pedophilia and sadistic pedophilia. And one is very bad. It's very bad indeed. But one is loving and kind and tender, and we like that one. He is a big favorite of the North American Man Boy Love Association. Sorry, this is getting real dark. All that to say, from Kinsey to Benjamin to Money to Michel Foucault, who's a famous French philosopher who argued, like, in the 70s in front of the French court, there should be no age of consent, and that is rumored to spend his time in Tunisia having sex with small boys in graveyards. But you can look these guys up. They got massive Wikipedia articles. Michel Foucault is also the father of queer theory. That's his kind of informal title. All of these guys were very explicit in their desire to have socially sanctioned pederasty with no consequence. The end game of all, people ask, why are librarians getting kids in to see drag queens? Why are kids the target of these sexually explicit drag shows? What about pride parades? Why are kids involved in all of this stuff? I don't understand why. And my response to that is, you don't understand why because you don't understand the explicitly stated goals of everybody in this movement for 70 years, which has always been, we want to have sex with your kids. So you shouldn't be surprised when the Gay Men's Chorus sings a song about, we're coming for your children. You shouldn't be surprised a few days ago when they're chanting, we're coming for your children. They are. They've always said that. It's not new. You just weren't paying attention because they were fringe, and they were weird and freaks, and we left them alone. But they've never kept it a secret what their end goal is. And their end goal is not, I want to identify as a cat in school, and you need to provide me with a litter box.
Yeah, right.
This is not very fun to talk about, and it's super, super dark. But also, hey, you know, this is the time to do something about it, because this is the end game. Like, we're there. This is it. If they can successfully gaslight society into denying the objective reality of chromosomal biology, they will definitely be able to gaslight society into denying the objective reality of age, of puberty. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They will, and they're already trying. And they are going to go for it, and it's kind of up to you to stop them. And there are different ways, I figure, to stop them. The final way is everything gets very shooty, which has happened before. I don't want to get shooty. That's very disruptive, and it never ends well. And, you know, people get actually hurt by bullets. So why the heck not try to put up a little firewall with a delightful children's parody book? That was my thought.
Well, there's something that you had said there that I hadn't even thought of, is that, so they're basically trying to make the term sex and gender to just have whatever the definition is to mean whatever it is to that person. Oh, it means this to me. Well, that's because it's my truth. Sex means this to me. Gender means this to me. You had mentioned age. They're going to be like, oh, wait, you're 13. What year were you born? 88? I don't think so. I actually, you know what? Do you feel 13 or do you feel like you're a 28-year-old? Like, well, how are you feeling? What's the age you actually feel in your head? Like, that could probably be like the next thing that they're going to do. You're not really 8. You're actually a 24-year-old, and you're perfectly legal to have sex and marry this 50-year-old dude or whatever.
It's extraordinarily easy to play out. Extraordinarily easy. You already have precedence of, you know, this, I don't remember, some Scandi country or Denmark or something, where, you know, he's in his 60s and he's like, I don't want to retire. I feel like I'm in my 40s. I want the government to legally change my age on my birth certificate. It won't start out as like a 6-year-old or a 12-year-old. It'll start out as a 65-year-old wanting to be 45. And then you set the precedent of, well, the government can change your birth date in a general sense. And then it'll be, I mean, I can see it. Haven't you heard of bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs? That's when, you know, a Jewish boy becomes a man, and that's 13 or 12. That's when a Jewish girl becomes a woman. Are you anti-Semitic? Are you saying that there's just all sorts of little hooks already in culture that they can kind of hang on you? And then you just get, what is the age of consent? Can they not consent to anything? Why would you even ask a child? Or is your child your slave? Do you ask what they like or not? Or doesn't a good parent ask what they want? And do you trust them at all? Don't you trust your children? There's all sorts of gaslighting and emotional manipulation that could go on in this. And, you know, it's some of it you can probably predict. Some of it will come out of left field. But I don't know. If you think it's not coming, is coming. It's not everybody, obviously. Not everybody bought a ticket for this particular bus ride wanting to go to the final destination. But, you know, they bought a ticket. They paid for the gas. It's not great.
That's just crazy, though, that that's probably the next thing is that you can legally change your birth date on your birth certificate. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how that's even possible. I can't even wrap my head around that idea.
I heard they do it in Mexico. I heard they actually can do it in Mexico. And I've never bothered to Google
it. Get out of here.
Which is just lazy. We should Google it. Can you change your birth date in Mexico?
That's crazy.
There you go. Yes. On December 3rd, the Supreme Court of Mexico ruled it defends the right to change one's date of birth on official documents according to the feelings and internal experience of citizens. That was in 2021. Mexican Supreme Court allows people to challenge date of birth, make themselves younger.
That's crazy. Wow. That's insane. I don't even know how you can just, yeah. I you know, my birth certificate says I'm 30, but actually I'm 23 and I feel 23. This is great. It's like, come on. Sometimes I feel like I'm 70. So I guess I'm 70 now because my back is hurting or something. Again, like, what are you talking about?
And that's the Supreme Court of Mexico.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, all that to say, you think it can't happen? Ooh, it happens. In fact, man, this is being a real depressing podcast. But maybe it's informative. Okay. You ever hear of Bacchabazi? Bacchabazi is, so let me take you back to a place called Afghanistan, where America went to war against the Taliban. And the Taliban are hardline Islamists, very violent, very oppressive. But they also were able to hold an entire population under its governance, and that's very difficult to do if everybody hates them. And it turns out that not everybody hated the Taliban. One of the reasons they didn't hate the Taliban is the Taliban, for all its evils, and there were many, very much opposed the practice of Bacchabazi, which was practiced by the Afghani people who the Americans allied with. And Bacchabazi means boy play. This is in the New York Times. It's Bacchabazi. If you recall, there was a senator, I think, from California named Duncan Hunter, who went to bat for an enlisted soldier. I think he was enlisted. I don't think he was an officer. But who beat the crap out of a local police chief and got court-martialed. And Duncan Hunter kind of stood up for him. But the whole thing centered around the fact that the American military allied with the opposition to the Taliban who practiced Bacchabazi. And they were told, like the American GI was told, when you get on base, you may see police chiefs, you may see our war chiefs, you may see our military allies on base with a bunch of little boys. And you can't do anything. Don't touch them. You're gonna want to, and you can't. Those are our team, and you have to leave them alone. And again, I mean, just Google it. You're gonna find a big New York Times article and all sorts of stuff. I'm not, you know, I got a pretty good imagination, but I couldn't make all this stuff up. All that to say, there is like immediate cultural precedent for the societal acceptance of pederasty. We're not talking about, well, 2,000 years ago in ancient Rome. We're talking about today with people that we fought beside. So yeah, it can happen. And again, I don't want it to.
Well, I was just going to mention that all these things that have happened with things that are happening now with all the trans movement. I mean, like just recently at the White House, people showing their tits and freaking gays and trans and whatever they're doing over there. And you also have the Supreme Court given Roe v. Wade. Like basically, Roe v. Wade is now up to the states. It's not just some federal things, up to the states as of right now.
Yeah, which is, look, and that is the right decision.
Yeah.
Whatever you believe about abortion, obviously, you're not going to be surprised that I'm extraordinarily opposed to the practice of abortion. But constitutionally, yeah, it's a state thing.
And then affirmative action was just one that was recently done.
Yeah.
And of course, people are flipping out, like, oh my gosh, this is a white supremacy all over again and all that stuff. And I'm just kind of thinking, so you're kind of sort of admitting that whites are good at getting into college and they're smart, but blacks and Hispanics and I guess other minorities aren't good at doing that. Yeah. So I don't know why you would just be like, all of a sudden, oh, it's just, this is going to help the white people and the Asians.
It is. So the best illustration of that, have you ever run across a Twitter account from someone called Erica Marsh?
Sounds familiar. Yeah.
I don't know if it's even a real person.
People say it's parody. Read. Some others don't. I don't know.
Yeah. But did you see this one from her? She quote unquote, this is worth reading. I mean, because Gavin Newsom tweeted about it. Michelle Obama tweeted about it. Gavin Newsom was funny because apparently the affirmative action has been illegal in California like since the 1990s. So he's all griping about it, but it's like, homie, you don't allow it in your state, dummy. But this gal, here we go. This is Erica Marsh yesterday, who said about the affirmative action ruling, "Today's Supreme Court decision is a direct attack on black people. No black person will be able to succeed in a merit-based system, which is exactly why affirmative action-based programs were needed. Today's decision is a travesty." So that's extraordinarily racist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is more explicit than most of these sentiments that you're seeing from people like Michelle Obama or Gavin Newsom, where they actually do think that black people can't succeed if it's a meritocracy. So that's super racist. And it is not something I actually believe. I work with all sorts of ethnicities in the hospital. And I'll tell you what, it's a meritocracy. And the fact that medical training does work very hard to make it not a meritocracy, because they actually do, for at least 20 years, they do put a lot of value on the identity politics in a way that, if it was more widely known, should be troubling to the typical, you know, potential patient. I'll give you a quick example, a couple of quick examples. Our orientation in medical school, this was in Texas, and I guess it would have been like mid 2000s. We get in there, it's 200 people. If you go to hospital, you ever worked in a hospital at all?
I have, yeah.
So it is extraordinarily diverse, naturally. There's no effort that's made to make it diverse. And it's not just people whose grandparents were from India or whose parents were from China. Like, it's people from all of these places, literally all over the world, every continent except Antarctica. And everyone's just working. Nobody cares. Part of the reason nobody cares is because everyone has actually seen blood and guts. It's all the same color. Like, skin color really actually is literally skin deep. And we don't just think it, we know it, because we cut bodies open. It doesn't matter if you can do the job. Nobody cares. Because it's a meritocracy. And it turns out that having a meritocracy leads to a natural diversity that's not forced or artificial or arbitrary. But so we all go to med school, and it is this diverse group. You know, half men, half women, every skin color and race. But the first thing that we hear from the stage in orientation is this admin, little liberal white woman. And the first thing she talks about is how at this medical school, we're so proud because because you have good residency placement? No. Because you have good MCATs? No. The thing she was proudest of is this class represents the most accurately out of any medical school in Texas, the racial makeup of the Texas population. And we're all looking around at each other like, who cares? This is 200 people. This is extraordinarily competitive to get to be here. And you're talking about, we've really picked the best ethnic representation. Wait, we all thought that we were like the 200 best applicants in general to be doctors. That it turns out that is actually not true. There were a couple of black girls who at some point, and I don't remember any details, but they had like a legitimate complaint about something. I don't remember what it was. They went to administration, and the response from admin at this medical school was, you really shouldn't complain because you are black and female, and that's the only reason you're here. So their response was not, oh my goodness, thank you so much. Didn't realize that we were affirmative action mercy cases to bump up your identity politics, virtue signaling, box checking. They were super offended. So were all of us. We were like, screw you guys. Because their impression was that they were there because they beat out everybody, because they were good. It's extraordinarily unfair. And it's if you got into Harvard because of affirmative action, would you feel like, I wouldn't feel great about it. I'd be like, I thought I got into Harvard, and you're telling me you needed another particular racial quota box checking. That's why you let me in. Like, that doesn't make me feel good about myself. I don't know. And then when you get into things like medicine, where people's lives are really on the line, I will tell you what, if your top 200 applicants to your medical school are all Indian women, the 200 medical students that you take need to be Indian women.
Yeah.
That's just why. And there's an argument that's made by, well, it was made specifically by a guy named Jerome Adams, who's an African-American anesthesiologist who Trump picked as Surgeon General. And he was going on and on about, the fact is that black people like black doctors. And you hear that argument like, well, you need this ethnicity because patients don't really trust the other. If I'm a doctor, I'm not going to cater to your racism as a patient. If you complain, if you say, I want you because you're white, I don't want this black doctor. What I'm going to say as a physician is, no, I'm not catering to your racism. I think it's extraordinarily offensive for a doctor, especially one with a platform like Jerome freaking Adams, ex-Surgeon General of the United States of America, to say, well, you know, if our patients are racist, we need to, as doctors, be considerate of that. I'm not going to be considerate to your explicit racism. I'm not. That's what I have to say about that. I don't remember what we were talking about.
Well, I was going to, in kind of going along with the affirmative action,
it's the
Supreme Court, as I said, they ruled that colleges and universities must stop considering race in admissions, and that puts an end to affirmative action in higher education. That was from the Associated Press. And then your favorite governor, Gavin Newsom, he tweeted, they want to whitewash our nation's history. They want to bring America back to the era of book bans and segregated campuses. We can, like, how does that even, like, what does that even mean?
It's nonsense. It's just pablum. It's far leftist dog whistling, and that man must never be president.
So affirmative action is equal to book banning?
No, it's just nonsense. It's, I don't even think he believes any of the stuff that he says. It's just, It's keywords designed to elicit a response and say, this is outrageous. It's not an accurate representation of what the Supreme Court actually decided. It's a nonsensical comparison, as you just pointed out.
Yeah.
It's clownish. It's buffoonish. And again, especially in the context of California has made affirmative action illegal since the 90s. So it's like, what are you talking about? You don't even allow it in your state, in your governor. Someone said that this will help him get president. That's basically the answer to anything that Gavin Newsom does is some aide. There's some calculation that says, hey, if you say this, it'll help you get president.
Well, I mean, let's hope and pray that it doesn't become president, because that would suck big time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think America would survive that, honestly.
It's just for education, and I guess that's kind of where the main focus of affirmative action is in education. It's like, oh, well, and it's kind of like what you were saying earlier, where if the 200 or so best applicants just happen to be all a certain race, then that's just how it's going to be, because they were the 200 that were the best. I don't know what to tell you. It's not like, oh, well, we'll pick 100 of those, but we're going to get 100 of some other people, because we can't look like we just like Indian people. I mean, come on. What are you, crazy? Yeah. We have to look diverse. And in a way, you're really kind of weakening your school if you're just going to bring, like, you're basically letting people just come in with, like, they're just dragging their feet behind them. And right. How is that? How does that help them out in the long run?
It doesn't. And speaking of the long run, I predicted this, and you're starting to see this a little bit in medicine. If it becomes widely publicized that the Harvards of the world, that colleges in general, that medical schools are lowering standards just to get African Americans and Hispanics in, and raising, so these are just the general racial demographics that everyone talks about, and raising the standard for Caucasians and Asian Americans, and that becomes widely known and widely understood. Guess who becomes the most highly valued person in that profession? Or graduate of that school. If you know that there's a certain number of Black or Latino doctors that made it into medical school just by virtue of their skin color, and that there were a whole lot of whites and Asians who were kept out because that standard is high, who are you going to want to go to? You're going to want to go to the white doctors. And the same for well, we need to get half women and half males, even though, you know, maybe 70% of the applicants are the best applicants are males. That's not fair. We have to do half and half. My point is, it's extraordinarily predictable, and you have start to see it happening as more of this gets publicized, is you make it so the valued members of the profession are white men or Asian men, because you're like, well, wow, okay, if you made it through and you had to jump that high hurdle, and you had to, and we know you had to because of affirmative action, and you're the white guy, I'm going to go to you. I'm not going to go to someone with a darker skin color, because you know, I don't know if they deserve to be there or if they were kind of a mercy case thanks to affirmative action. You know what I mean? Right. That's not fair. That's not fair to anybody involved in it, but that will become the attitude of people shopping for a doctor or whatever. You pick anything. If affirmative action makes its way into engineering school, you're going to, well, I'm going to get the guy. They're going to want the person who had to jump over the highest bar, because they know that person demonstrated a competence that they can trust when they're talking about building a house or building a railway or a bridge or being their physician. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When it's something important, they want to know that that person made it through all the hoops and deserves to be there. And one of the worst things about affirmative action is it creates a question mark for whether this person, based on the color of their skin, really deserved to be there, or if they were just the recipient of a box checking quota that the institution made. And again, I hate that. It's not fair. That's what the Supreme Court said too. They said, this isn't fair. It's not fair to anybody. And that's wonderful. It's wonderful for everybody. It's not unfair to blacks like Erica Marsh and Michelle Obama and Jerome Adams and Gavin Newsom said. It's absolutely fair, leveling the playing field and letting the best people who, again, looking at medicine, will be diverse. The best people will be representative of everybody in whatever proportion. There's no telling, but it doesn't have to be a certain proportion. And that's fine. And you also don't do it with anything. You're not like, well, the NBA, I don't know, or Major League Baseball or soccer, we better make sure there's a racial quota. No, you pick who's the best.
Right.
You pick who's the best. And you know what? Those organizations, the elite people in those organizations at those particular things, they don't accurately reflect the racial makeup of America. And you know what? Who cares? I want to watch basketball where they're all really freaking good at basketball.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have, well, we need some height, some affirmative action for height. Pick a characteristic. It's nonsense. I want to see everybody dunking the freaking ball. And you know, if occasionally, hey, you're 5'10 and you can dunk and you can get out there and play, sweet. Love it. Awesome.
It's like the Daniel Tosh joke where it's, oh, you know, see our US women's gymnastics team, you know, the black woman or an Asian woman and a white woman. It's like, we'll go over to China. What's their, oh, it's all Chinese people. So,
yeah,
you know, I know it's not like 100% similar, but I'm sure maybe for that gymnastics team, maybe they were the best, but how do we know? And so if we go back to like the medical school, if it was 200 at the top and it just so happened to be 150 white men, then it's 150 white men. I don't know what to tell you. They're the one. They're 150 of these people were white men, and they're 150 of some of the highest scores. So actually, because we want to be more diverse, we're gonna just take 75 of them, and then the other 75, they're gonna have to try again next year.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's not fair. And again, like I said, practically, that's not what you see. It's just not what you see. Some of the most brilliant doctors that I personally know are literally every ethnicity that you can think of. I work with every ethnicity you can think of every day. And nobody cares because everyone knows that every single one of them is good at their jobs. And they prove it every day. Mm-hmm. Which is why it's so bonkers to me that some people think that it's even necessary. Because none of these guys or gals, none of these men or women that I work with who are excellent surgeons, excellent anesthesiologists, excellent nurses, and truly representative of everywhere, literally in the world, except Eskimo. I don't know if I know any Eskimos. But otherwise, I mean, everywhere from South Africa to Kenya to South America to Mexico to I know some Canadians. It's okay to be racist against Canada, though. I'm fine with that. That's the only one. But everybody, if you let the best people have the job or have the spot in medical school or have the spot in Harvard, you're still going to get diversity. And I reject the attitude of the Michelle Obamas and the Gavin Newsom that says, well, no, they'll fail if we don't have this. I don't think they will fail, whoever that is. Because I see them not. You know, I see them being brilliant and capable. So it's just extraordinarily offensive. And it's not what America is, because America truly is the only melting pot where your ethnicity does not have to matter. It is the only place in the world that's ever been like that. Because in China, it sure does. In China, yeah, they're all going to be, everyone on your Olympic team is going to be Chinese girls. Just going to be, well, not girls. There are going to be some guys there too. But America is a very special place in that regard. And it just drives me crazy to see all the racial animosity, because when I grew up, it was beaten. Like, it was gone. When was your childhood? 90s? Was it most of the 90s?
Yeah.
I was kind of 80s and 90s. And I'll tell you what, man, my favorite baseball player was Barry Bonds. And the best singers in the world were Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey. And there was no asterisk by best baseball player. It was not best, my favorite African-American baseball player. I didn't care. I didn't know that I should care. Just Barry Bonds was, and he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and I need my baseball cards that I have of him from his rookie year to 1993 to when the strike made me not care about baseball to be worth something, and they're not, because they're not letting him in the Hall of Fame, and it's not fair. Then that's totally aside. Nobody cared about race. Nobody in school cared about race. I didn't have, well, these are my Indian friends, and these are my Asian friends, and this is my Mexican friend, here's my Black friend. I had all of those, but I didn't think of them that way. And I don't think I had any special particular upbringing or environment. Just people didn't do it. And then there was some point in the 2000s, and I want to say it was when Barack Obama became a sociological necromancer, and he resurrected this dead specter of racism from its grave in American history, which by that point, it was like two generations ago. It wasn't even my generation that did it. It was a generation before me. You know, with Jackie Robinson was a generation before me. We had already gone through that. We had already had, I don't know. It drives me nuts. I can't believe that this is still something that we're dealing with, because truly, if you grew up in the 80s or 90s, you know how it was. And generally, my experience was it just wasn't a thing. Nobody cared. And now you got all these divisions. And I got to think that it's a cynical way to divide and conquer and get political demographics for voting for you. But I don't know. I hate it. I don't like it.
Well, Mark, we'll go and end it there. Let people know where they can follow you on social media and where they can find your books and anything else you'd like to plug.
Oh, gosh. What could we plug? What do you want to plug? Should we plug children's books? I don't know. That wasn't a very children's book kind of topic.
yeah.
if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am a chaos agent who just doesn't care. And it's Huff number 4 Congress. I have never run for Congress, but by golly, if I ever do, I've already got the handle for it. And somewhere buried in there, I do have all my policy positions, which pretty much just amounts to voting no for everything and being real rude to people, which would be fun. It's too late to back Man I Am because the campaign just ended, but hopefully that'll go up for sale somewhere else. I want to talk about a project I'm about to sign a contract with that is a delightful book about ice cream. But we'll have to talk about that later, Jane.
Okay. Well, here,
I'll tell you about my ice cream book later, but that should be fun. If you want to get my children's books, which are hilarious, you can look for Mark Huffman. And then just look for the Toot Fairy, T-O-O-T, Fairy. Do you have any words about the Toot Fairy? What's your thoughts about the Toot Fairy?
It's really good, and it's well written, and it's a really fun read, I would have to say. And there I like go. I like the one The name escapes me at the moment, but it's the one where it's you're not rhyming.
Oh, I hate that book. Yeah, that's called Billin the Bard, B-I-L-L-A-N. Yeah.
That one's probably my favorite one, actually. I hate that book. Yeah.
That's a lot of people's favorite. My favorite is probably my cheese one, which is called Cheesemaker Durdsden. But Billin the Bard was a gag that I wrote in the car, dictated. I didn't type. But just to irritate my publisher, and I sent it to him. And he was like, this is great. Let's publish it. I want to make this a book. I'm like, really? Is this the worst thing I ever wrote? But the whole gag is that you know it's supposed to rhyme and it doesn't rhyme.
Yeah.
And it's just the most irritating thing that I've ever done. But that's called Billin the Bard. So you can look for any of those on Amazon. And if you buy them, that'd be lovely, because then I could keep making more, because I got, you know, a whole bunch on my phone. And that's what I would rather do. Just buy my children's books so I can just write fun children's books and not get involved in all this social garbage, because it's exhausting and I don't like it, but I feel obligated to do it because it's all kind of horrifying. But I don't want to do it. I want to keep working on my Toot Fairy series. I got like 6 more Toot Fairy books where they get on all sorts of flatulence-related situations. I do really have like 6 more. That's it. That's all I got. That's all I got for now.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining the show. Really appreciate it. And for everyone watching, listening, tune in next time. We will have the Unfit Statesman. Really looking forward to having him on. And so, we will see you then. Bye.
Bye.
The truck's backing up because they're hearing us. I think it's time to end this episode.
And smash that like button.
Yeah, smash that like button.
Just break your computer.
And don't forget to subscribe. Hit that subscribe button.
Bye.
Bye.